Don? Tell us what series you've worked on. Go ahead.
I'll go first since I'm right here. My name is Alex Langley, and I worked on the web series Geeks and Gamers Anonymous, about a support group for gaming and other forms of geekery addicts. And I'm also the author of The Geek Handbook and Geek Lust, available wherever fine and not so fine books are sold.
Hello. How's everybody doing? Yeah.
Where's your book?
I have this one. Hi, my name is Bill Ostroff. I'm the creator, writer, director of Jedi Camp, which was a 6-episode web series about a bunch of little kids. They go to the first ever George Lucas Jedi Camp and learn the ways of the Force. And it was also about bullying. Please, at the end of the session, you can pick up some stickers and cool stuff. I had no books.
That's okay.
Yeah. Next.
Yeah. You have a web series.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Thorpe, and I'm an actress, producer, web content creator. My most recent project was called The Ladies and the Gents, which consisted of 60 episodes that we shot over 4 days, all taking place in a bathroom, and we involved 150 web celebs to direct, write, and act in our little short episodes. I have postcards and buttons of that if you want to come up and find out and watch the show. I'm probably best known for doing a fan fiction trailer of a 35-year-old fantasy franchise called ElfQuest. That happy anniversary to that. My producing partner, Paula Rhodes, and I filmed that a couple of years back. And long story short, we now hold the film and TV rights to that franchise and are very excited about the possibilities of bringing it to larger screens. We have a line of t-shirts with We Love Fine. They're selling on the floor right now, and a jewelry line coming up. So those are my two most recent, and as well, Shelf Life, which you'll hear more about towards the end of the panel.
Yay. Hey, I'm Sandeep Parekh. How do I say my name?
I think your
name is
Sandeep. It's like the sun rising.
Sandeep Parekh. Good. I got it. All right. It's confusing. It's spelt with an A. My parents are assholes. But it's pronounced like a U. Yeah. So I was in web series. I was in the guild that this guy directed. I created
my intro.
I created The Legend of Neil for Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Thank you. That guy watched it. and then most recently, Save the Supers for My Name Channel, which I should say.
Woo!
You should watch that. That guy really watched it. His pants off. And then I just recently finished directing a pilot for Nerdist called The Real Housewives of Horror, which is starring Bria Grant and was produced by Kevin Pereira. And so that was a really fun project that I'll tell you more about later. Sean Becker.
Thank you, Sandeep. I'll speak up for the people in the back. My name is Sean Becker. I directed seasons 2 through 5 of The Guild, and then since then I've been working with Felicia on a lot of the shows for her Geek and Sundry channel, most recently The Flog, Co-Optitude, and then Will Wheaton's Not the Flog, which is a spoof of Felicia Day's The Flog. It's incredibly confusing. And then I've also worked a lot with Jeff Lewis from The Guild on the Jeff Lewis 5-Minute Comedy Hour, and then most recently... Chatroom Solitude, which was for Stan Lee's World of Heroes channel, and then just recently wrapped season 2 of Mike and P Life, starring Teal Shear, who was also in the guild.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Hello, my name is Dino Andrade, and I am a voice actor. I perform all the wonderful voices you hear on radio, television, feature films. Not all of them, of course, just the good ones. Yes, my name is Dino. I'm a voice actor. I was in the web series Summer Eye Daycare. I was in Oishi High School Battle. I'm now on a new show called 16-Bit High School that's going to be coming out soon, all animation for the web. PvP, yes, I was in PvP as well. Skull of Troll for that, for those of you who remember that one season. I'm probably best known as the Scarecrow from Batman Arkham Asylum and Mechatork, Nimeron, Professor Putrescide, and all the Death Knight gnomes in World of Warcraft and all that kind of fun stuff. And for those of you looking for your geek mate, I'm also the creator of SoulGeek.com, believe it or not. Isn't that bizarre? Yeah. So that's me. And yep, I've got a booth on the floor too, so stop by, get a t-shirt. Well, anyway, this is great.
Yeah, right. I'm Dave B. Mitchell, also a voice actor. I've worked with this guy a couple things. Let's see. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. But the things that probably web stuff probably most known for, did all of the Control-Alt-Delete animated series, PvP, did that. If you're familiar with the Looking for Group animated stuff, I'm actually Richard from Looking for Group. Which were, by the way, where they decided, I think this week, they decided they're not going to do a movie. It looks like we're actually going to try and do a TV series instead for LG, so that's cool. I also work on Shelf Life. I do most of the voiceover stuff, which is ironic since the entire cast is made up of some of the most accomplished voice actors in the business, but they have me do a lot of the VO stuff for the show. What else? I've done, probably 100 video games, animation, did a show called Lil Bush for Comedy Central a few years ago. It was about a third of the voices on that show. What else? Bunch of stuff. Movies, TV, commercials, narration, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
You did a bunch of interstitials for, what was it, Cartoon Network? The Five Senses?
Oh yeah, yeah, did, yeah. We did that. We did so. Yeah, all kinds of stuff. Actually, we did a commercial together once for the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
yes, we were pirates.
We were pirates. Yeah, we were pirates in a Mormon commercial. So if any of you converted to Mormonism because of that, that was us.
Get them on the wrong side.
I think I might after seeing that.
Can I move to the audience and just ask them questions? The rest of the panel.
Let's do that.
So yeah, that's me. Hi, how you doing? Thanks for coming.
And I am Katrina Hill, the action flick chick. I also wrote a book, Action Movie Freak, and I'm an online journalist and write for lots of websites. But so you guys seem like a very lively group, and I'm so happy for that. But before we get into the creation of web series, I just want to know, on the set of all your web series, do you guys play around a lot? Any lots of pranks behind the scenes or shenanigans going on?
How are you, Mike?
I have a she's special.
Magic.
She's special.
Why is her voice just automatic?
You mean like bloopers or like slashing tires in the parking lot? Like pranks?
Okay.
Murders, you know.
Does it go as far as slashing tires?
I have never personally slashed tires on a set. I've wanted to slash a few tires, but I have not yet done that. I keyed your car. But on the Ladies and the Gents, we had a lot of outtakes that we are putting together for a blooper reel. We did a couple of takes with scatological humor that didn't make the final cut, so we're excited to show those around, especially when the actors took it upon themselves to impromptu vomit and not tell the directors and the producers just to make it extra fun. That's always nice. Someone has to clean that up, and that's usually me. No, they stuck donuts and pizza crust with water and held it in a bathroom stall for the whole take and came out and just puked on the floor. It was awesome.
Did it have to be donuts and pizza crust?
No, that's just what was on the craft table, so they just shoved.
Use what you got.
Yeah. Easter Valley bars.
Yeah, it was great. It was great because then it expanded and she didn't really realize how much she had in her mouth and it just went all over. But anyway, so we'll be releasing that soon online. And that will haunt her forever. But she's a wonderful actress. And then usually I'm bad cop because my producing partner Paula Rhodes is 5 foot tall and looks like an elf. This is for the project ElfQuest. So she's always the good fairy cop, and I'm the evil bad cop. So I'm not a jokester.
That's more fun anyway.
Yeah,
for the voiceover side of it, as far as the web series is concerned, I've either had to record in the producer's, editing room or on my own home equipment as opposed to going to, like, some big expensive studio. So, recording at home, I get to record in the nude, women's clothes, whatever I want, So, we get to make our own mirth.
I like the stunned silence when you said that. I was just going to... But, pretty much all of those I've done at home. really.
Yeah, yeah. PvP, you probably recorded at home.
I do LFG at home. Mostly just because that's kind of the way it's changed for voice actors, is that the industry's changed to the point where, because of broadband proliferation and the digital technology, we're really kind of on the hook to do everything ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do almost all my auditions from the house. Done all those series, and actually I do pretty much any narration stuff that I've done for actual broadcast TV I've done from the house. Just did a show, Patrick Dempsey Racing Le Mans, the narrator of that. Did that all at home. Did another series called Paranormal Paparazzi, which was like TMZ meets Ghost Hunters. It was on the Travel Channel. Did that all at home. So yeah, we're by ourselves a lot of the time, which is not necessarily a good thing, because God knows what we're doing then. But
yeah, I mean, when I did 16-Bit High School, it's premiering next year, as well as Oishi, we recorded in the editing room with the director. So the director had to just bite his lip, because we're doing some really hilarious stuff, and you know, anybody in the room busts up, all of our takes are ruined, because we're not behind glass or in an official booth. So it's a totally different atmosphere. Kind of reminded me of when we were in film school. You know?
It's kind of funny hearing, like, just knowing low-budget filmmaking and hearing you guys say the sentence, we did our Travel Channel show from home.
Yeah.
that sounds about right, though.
Yeah.
So what are some of the advantages of doing a web series versus television shows or movies or other things?
Freedom. Sweet, sweet freedom. You have the freedom to do whatever you want and to get yelled at by legions of people on YouTube who think you suck. So it's a double-edged sword.
And no money.
And no money, yeah.
No
There's
money.
That, too.
That's what it's
We probably all raise money on Kickstarter and Indiegogo.
Money's heavy. Like, it's heavy to carry. You know? So it's nice to be free of that burden.
I just pay people in compliments.
Yeah.
They don't like it.
They like it?
Nope.
No fans?
Nope. No fans. They like money.
Yeah, I think, I mean, creative freedom is probably the answer you always get, but it's also a stepping stone probably to, I mean, if you're doing a web series and it doesn't have a lot of cash, it's probably because either A, you had trouble selling it on your own, but you believe in it so much that you have to make it. There's no B. I don't know why I started with a list. I mean, that's probably why you're making a web series. It's because you have to make it.
All of one tip. And B, it actually gets it out there, I think.
It gets it out there, yeah, for people to see it, and you can find your own audience. Thank you. That's
yes,
B.
That was B.
Yeah, I knew there was a B. So, you know, the advantages are, you get to control the whole thing, and it gets to be in your voice, and nobody has to tell you what to do, but the disadvantages is that nobody's paying you to do it, most likely.
For us, it's great roles, because a lot of major television, major features are all going to, you know, stars, name actors, all those kind of stuff we wouldn't get a shot at. So, hey, we get these web series, we get terrific roles we wouldn't get otherwise. So, for us, it's great work.
And also, there's just no excuse to doing it. There's a million excuses that you can't do a TV show like getting hired on one, or a movie as in, like, not having $100,000. But web series, it's, you know, anyone who's here has a cell phone that shoots video. You can make a web series, but just make sure that, I think one of the biggest problems with web series, people starting off, and that might limit them to wanting to do one, is that maybe you're too ambitious. So, you know, especially if you're a first-time filmmaker or you're doing this for the first time, like, I mean, that's the way the internet even started. It was like, start off with vlogs, start off with, like, home movies, put your own twist on them, and then, you know, kind of build your way up. Don't try right away to make the next big narrative web series on no budget, and then if it doesn't work out, you're not going to want to do it again. But to kind of build your way up and then use the resources to your advantage rather than trying to be too ambitious, I think is key when you're doing something with no money. But then you'll learn and you'll do better, and then you'll make contacts, be able to call in favors, and just you can build on that forever.
You're speaking from experience, aren't you?
I read this somewhere.
But I think that's good advice, too, just because of the fact that it really does, it's sort of like doing proof of concept stuff. But being able to put it out there and let people see what your vision is. Even if you don't have the money, people can see, okay, you did a short thing, and it's like, you know what, okay, the budget's not there, but there's something there creatively, there's some storytelling, there's something like that. And it can open doors for other people to come in that do have money and say, hey, I like what you did there, let me see if you can do something longer, let me see what happens if you have a budget. So
for sure, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily limit your creativity. I mean, we built the entire world of Zelda of Hyrule, like out of, you know, construction paper and styrofoam. So we were limited by budget, but you know, we had sweat equity and we had the ability to sneak into you know, parks and film the Wiggly. So, you know, you just use all your resources that you got to accomplish. Ultimately, it's about your voice and really honing and crafting your voice and making sure that it's something unique and, you know, and getting it out there. So I wouldn't necessarily limit yourself. It's my
point. As a follow-up, I'd say first and foremost, the thing to concern yourself with, too, is don't worry about the fact that you can't make the next Star Wars, but just tell a good story. You know, don't worry about the, oh, I can't do the special. You know, tell a good story. That's that at any level. You know, I wish more big-budget filmmakers kept that in mind.
Right.
Just tell a good story. If you have an idea, have an idea and tell a good story. And that will kind of, you know, cover a multitude of sins as far as having a lack of budget and things like that goes. But if you have an idea, flesh it out, tell a good story.
With
you know.
Good voice actors.
that helps, yeah.
Or real actors.
Yeah, good real actors.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you who've dabbled in the animated series, are there any special considerations or differences between doing a live action? Anything easier, anything more difficult? It might be easier getting everybody together since you can record your voices from home.
Well, I'd say, in that case, you aren't limited by the physicality of having to build a set or find a location or, you know, teach somebody to fight with a lightsaber or something like that. And with, again, the same thing that sort of allowed us to work from home now, digital animation, the fact that you can do things at home that you couldn't have done in professional studios 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So you can do really professional-looking things, professional-quality stuff at home. And I think, like, all the stuff that we've done with LFG and PVP and Control-Alt-Delete and all that stuff, that's actually done by a professional animation company out of Canada called Blind Ferret. But there's a lot of great things you see online that just people with some talent and some a little bit of computing power and some vision, you know, can really make something that is competitive.
Yeah, I found that the two biggest differences is that in non-web series stuff, and with probably the exception, again, of 16-Bit High School, where I was actually with the director in the room, most of the times we have to rely on ourselves to self-direct. We've got these scripts that are sent to us, like you've got, like in PVP, the scripts were written in Texas, approved in Canada, then emailed to our homes in Los Angeles, and then we don't have a director. There's nobody being Skyped in or anything, so we have to completely self-direct ourselves. And then oftentimes we're given multiple scripts for multiple episodes to all knock out in one shot, as opposed to on a regular TV series or video game or so on, where we've got like a four-hour block, we're only doing one episode or, you know, one section of the game. I mean, we were on Arkham Asylum for months. But we did all of 16-Bit High School in one afternoon. So it's like, as a voice actor, okay, you don't have sets, you don't have props, you don't have anything, so let's just knock you out, boom, 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 boom. And we just have to roll with it. And then again, when we're at home, we have to direct ourselves. So we're giving multiple takes and have no idea if this is really what they want. So they're relying on us to give them good shit.
Although,
you get the whole scripts though, and you kind of read through the whole thing,
yeah,
and make sure that you're keeping with the story.
Yeah,
so you can see what your interactions are going to be, and a lot of it, you know, you're kind of guessing what the other actor's performance is going to be though,
exactly,
because of the fact that, and it's gotten to the point more now where, because of the technology, I have a virtual number through Skype. It's an actual phone number that I paid $60 a year for. And you can call into that from any phone, landline cell phone, and the feed on from my end is coming from the mic in my booth. So what they're actually hearing on the other end is what I'm recording, and then I've got the cans on. I can actually hear them directing me in the cans. So that, yeah, that's worked out really nicely. It's essentially just like doing a phone patch in a regular studio. But
it's interesting because I did two animated series. One I never saw the light of day for Machinima that Felicia wrote, and we had all the actors in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
Acting against each other. Well, because
which we prefer. We love to do that. Yeah.
For me, improv is very important, and that's my entire background, so I always like to give the actors an opportunity to improvise, and I don't see how you could possibly do that if you just went off the script one character at a time.
Yeah, not nearly as much. I mean, you know, there's always going to be a little bit of that, but yeah, it's much better when you put us all in the same room because you know, we want to surprise each other. We don't want to know what's coming, so we can kind of react to it like that.
Right.
So.
So, okay, let's say you've got an idea for a show. Where do you go from there in creating a web series? you got an idea, what's next?
You grab some people who are willing to stand around and work for free and or teeny tiny little pay like pizza. That's what you do.
Well, I would say first thing you have to do is write it. Nobody is going to be as passionate about your project as you are. Jedi Camp started about 5-6 years ago with just a small idea in my head of just doing a little comedy series, and then a couple years later it morphed into something else after reading something from a young lady named Katie who was being bullied at school because she wore Star Wars stuff. So then I decided, well, let's do it this way. And then at that point, Kickstarter was invented, and I raised money, and I paid actors, and I paid crew, and not a lot of money, but enough to do a weekend.
You wrote it before you did the Kickstarter?
I wrote it before I did Kickstarter, and basically had 3 or 4 actors that were already kind of intent on working with me, and I cast a bunch of amazing children, and, you know, we kicked it out in a weekend. So, what was the question?
I think you raise a really good point that going from the initial idea stage, I would say that 90% of web series die in people's minds because they never take that next step, which is, to write something down. It's hard to inspire people to come and work for you, which is probably that subsequent step, without giving them something, you know, showing them something. So even if it's, if it's something that's animated, maybe it's drawing a few characters, and you just have to have something tangible. I always write scripts, even though we do a lot of improv. I always write scripts because I do think that's the form in which people can kind of, they're used to sort of imagining the project come to life through a script. So that's my next step, and then I have a reading sometimes if I really want to, if it's something, you know, like The Legend of Neil or Save the Supers. You know, we have readings with potential cast. One of my very first projects, which was an earlier version of Save the Supers, you know, I had a table read with a bunch of improv actors that I just met doing improv with, and that's where I met my DP. He just happened to be at the reading and was like, "Hey, I loved what I heard. I totally came here as a friend to one of the actresses and expected to fall asleep, but was really, really enjoyed it." And then he's like, he happened to be working on The Biggest Loser, and brought on his entire reality crew to work for free on the show, and all of a sudden I had a 30-person crew overnight for free. So, I mean, it really is, it's about taking that next proactive step, whatever you can do. You know, I couldn't afford to shoot it, so I knew the guy that ran the theater, and he let us use the space for a reading, and then, lo and behold, you get to the next step, so.
I'm just curious, like, out of everyone here, who here is either working on a web series or has an idea and wants to do a web series?
All right.
And who's here for the next panel? Okay, good. No, it's good to see that there are people here who like have interests.
I'm here for
the next panel. So am I. It's really good
to see.
Oh yeah, I was just curious. No, that's awesome. Are we doing Q&A stuff too?
I've got
more questions, but we'll see if we can get to it.
Yeah, I'll just interject as well. Just sort of volleying off what you just said, is make friends, make contacts, call in favors. Maybe you're not the best writer, be honest with your abilities and find someone who is. Maybe you don't know how to operate a camera. Find the crew, find the people, surround yourself with talent and good people. There are, if you're LA-based, there are lots of places here that you can meet new people, New Media Vault, and tons of other stuff. I am online on Facebook. I run a group called the League of Extraordinary Ladies that is open to both women and men, and it's men and women in the geeky community, and a lot of people work in web series or other forms of entertainment, so I'd recommend checking that out as well, and go to meetups and groups and meet people. You'll find a lot of like-minded people who are eager to get stuff done.
I was going to say, also give favors before you even get them. You know, a good way to meet people that are making web series is, volunteer or help out. We always need help. We always need hands. So as long as you're not a crazy person, we probably can use you. So,
or if you're a functional crazy person. Then
We'll take functional crazy.
Take your crazy after we're done, after rap, then it's fine.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah. Favors are worth so much more right now at this stage than money, because you can pay someone $20 for coming out for 12 hours, or you could help an actor cut their reel if you're an editor or if you're a... Because a lot of people that I work with, everyone's got a certain skill set, and so we're able to, because I'm primarily a director, but I make my living through editing, so because of editing, I've been able to cut actors' reels to have them act and stuff for free, or, you know, that's actually about it. I don't have anything more to do. But I just found that it's worth a lot more to figure out like what you could do or what your skill set is, whether it's editing, color correction, or even just coming out and helping out and peeing for the day. Like, you're going to get a lot more in return than just handing someone $20.
And to add on to that too, you never know who you're going to end up working with, because you never know who's got the next great idea. If we all knew what was going to hit, we'd be doing it now. So, you know, kind of everything, you throw it up and see what happens. But you never know who you're going to be working with. You never know what they're going to go on to do. And creating goodwill at any level, especially at the ground floor, is a great thing, because a lot of the time then, if they go up, they'll take you with them. So, and also remember, do that for them too. The people, I still work for people now, and I do it for less than what I normally get paid, just because when I was broke, they were good to me, and they hired me, and they gave me jobs, and they gave me opportunities. And so now, I return the favor. They can't afford me now, to be honest, but I'll still work for them for what they can afford, because they were good to me, and I feel like I need to be good to them in return. So, you know.
Exactly. Because for guys like us who are not content creators, it was a matter of just putting ourselves out there and saying, you know, yes, I'd be happy to help out. You don't know who you're going to wind up meeting, what cool thing you're going to be involved in, and that's how we met. Yeah, just putting ourselves out there and saying, yeah, I'd be happy to. I mean, I just did the Breaking Bad toy spoof commercials for Kill 9. And that was just, you know, somebody who called me up. I had worked with me years ago and said, look, all I've got is just this. I know you get more than that, but would you do it? I was like, of course I would. You know, yes, absolutely for you. Yeah, because those relationships were built up, you know. So yeah, so for guys like us who are not content creators, it's just a matter of putting yourself out there and saying, yes, you'd be willing to do that. Be willing to help out. Don't be a jerk about it. Don't get full of yourself.
Don't burn your bridges.
Right. Filmmaking is a team effort. Going out there and trying to do it all yourself, directing, editing, shooting, writing, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, we can't all be Tommy Wiseau. You know?
Yeah, we can't, right. And that was a spectacular feature film. But, I mean, the great thing, I think one of the best things to come out in the last few years is Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, I've made more connections on Twitter, I think, with other filmmakers and other people to create my crews on, whether it's a big thing or a little thing, if I need to hire a PA to work on a show I'm working on. I make more connections on Twitter than anything else.
What's that? What's the website?
It's a TWI.
Sounds weird.
Yeah, well.
So how do you determine the length of your episodes when you're not, you know, you don't have these television guidelines, they don't have to be 22-minute episodes with commercials and blah, 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 and you've got all these ideas and you want to fit them in, but, I mean, do you limit yourself or do you just write?
That's a really good question.
Or
that's something
that do you just put it all in or do you have to cut it?
I feel like that's a constantly evolving, there's an answer to that question,
it really is.
Actually. It used to be. I feel like 2 years ago, it was like, don't make anything under 3 minutes. And then, you know, Yahoo started making their original series that were, you know, 10 to 12 minutes in length. And my personal rule is, what's the length that fits the material? I mean, I feel like that's the only good way to really gauge that. And so it is sort of like your judgment as to whether or not, hey, does this material really merit a 12-minute episode, or can we tell this in 2 minutes? So I would say that maybe the second part of that rule is make it as short as you can within that constraint of making sure that it fits the material. It tells the story that you want to tell. We just did, for Real Housewives of Horror, it was a 14-page script that we shot in one day, and I wanted to kill myself. But it was a 14-page script that I knew already was only going to be about 10 minutes. I knew I'd cut that down in post, even while we were shooting, and then it ended up being 7 minutes after the edit. So we targeted a certain, let's get this in that sort of 10 to 12 minute Yahoo range, and then the material just didn't really beg itself to be that length. To keep it snappy, it ended up being, you know, 7.5-8 minutes. So that's my answer.
But what I like about Real Housewives and what I think, because I agree with you, I used to have that same mentality of like it's got to be like 1 minute to 2 minutes to like it's got to be under five is always the rule, and I still try to keep it as short as possible. But if the material needs to be longer than that, make sure that those first 15, 20 seconds, like you've got them hooked. Because if you don't, they have every other reason in the world to click off of it. They have other videos on the sidebar. They have ads that are popping up. They have their internet. They have porn. You have other TV shows. Like I don't joke about that. Like there's so many distractions.
That's a great rule. Make sure the first 15 seconds are better than porn.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which they should be, because that's a lot of setup.
Yeah.
So I've heard. I don't watch porn.
Liar.
Watch. Anyways, that's all I can think about now. But no, so just make sure that you really hook your audience right away. And with I haven't seen the whole thing yet, but I have seen the opening, and it's in your face. It tells you exactly what it's going to be, who's going to be in it, and I thought that's a great example of something that's 7 minutes long that you can hook an audience in the first 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah. For me, I think this is a good example. I subscribe to your rule as well. Let the material dictate the length, but hook them. For the ladies and the gents, the 40 episodes that we shot, I think our longest one was 5 minutes and change, and our shortest one was 40 seconds. And it was determined by the script that came in, how the director set everything up, and we let the material determine how long that week's episode was going to be.
My goal was to shoot 6 episodes, and only 6 episodes of Jedi Camp. And the time restraints and the budgetary constraints for me were I was going to pop out in one weekend 6 episodes, however I was going to pop them out, and basically tried to keep them within 3 to 4 minutes. Thankfully it worked. I started with a 27-page script, and I had to cut stuff out left and right, just so that it would flow right. But I mean, the only goal of Jedi Camp was always, since it's a fan film, was as an homage, it should be 6 episodes. And I wanted to have enough in each episode that would move the story forward.
I think it's interesting to note, though, that everybody mentioned cutting stuff out. I think a lot of first timers make the mistake of like, oh, my stuff is so good, I gotta keep adding, I gotta make this longer. More is not better. You know, you should be shedding pages. You should be trimming it to be faster. I mean, even the Coen brothers, I remember this quote from when I was first getting into filmmaking. They said, like, if they had a director's cut, like, most director's cuts are longer than the theatrical cut.
It's like a Judd Apatow movie.
Right, well, yeah, right. they said for their director's cuts, it would be shorter. Like, we would make our cuts shorter, you know, and that always stuck with me as, like, you know, shorter is better if you can do it.
I mean, it's tough because you put so much time and effort into writing the stuff and shooting the material, but you have to realize that the old expression, brevity is the soul of wit, is very true. People are much more likely to enjoy something that is 40 seconds of pure gold than they are to enjoy something that's 3 minutes of, it's okay, whatever, not bad.
Well, now I'll add on a story I was telling you guys earlier. I went to see a pre-release screening of Hellboy 2 at the Academy, and there were... most of the cast was there, and Guillermo del Toro was actually there doing a Q&A, and he told a story that I think really fits in here. And it's what made me realize, I was already a huge fan, but it made me realize why he's one of the best directors out there. He talked about this shot that he set up. It was a 3-4 day crane shot, the most elaborate thing he's ever done in his entire career. It took him forever to set this thing up and shoot it. And he said by the time it was done, it was not only the best thing he'd ever done, it was his favorite thing he'd ever done his entire career. And it's not in the film. It's not in the film. And everybody booed because they thought, oh, the studio cut it out. And he said, no. The studio didn't touch it. When I put the film together, I watched it, and I realized that scene didn't serve the story, so I cut it out.
Yeah.
You know? To hear a director say that, the best thing I ever did didn't serve the story, so I voluntarily took it out of the film. That's how you get it done.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get it done.
So, as an anime reviewer, I like to balance humor and being informative about, hey, this is what the... Oh, I forgot. I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Justin Carvalho. I run an anime review web series called the American Anime Otaku. And what I like to do is I like to make jokes about my favorite shows, but at the same time be informative. And I like to balance things out, be funny, and keep people hooked, saying, this is what the show's about, this is what I think of the show. And,
is there a question?
I was just wondering, is that how you
hook people in? How you guys hook people in?
Oh, how do we hook people? Like, yeah. Like, what are some? I guess what are some tips on how to hook people in those first pages?
Or really,
but
also I can promote too. You know, it's
that's
like.
What I
want
to know is
how to promote stuff. It's a good question. How do you guys promote your web series?
Yeah, because most of, I mean, I've done Kickstarter too. Most of you guys have probably done Kickstarter or Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, almost all the Blind Verge stuff come through Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yes.
We did a couple of, we're doing the LFG game came through there. The last LFG video came through there. The LFG series, we're about to launch a Kickstarter for that. And obviously, you know, we're putting that out there on Facebook and Twitter and you know, all the kind of the social media stuff. But that certainly has changed the game as far as having an ability to actually do the material where you're not necessarily reliant on your own resources. If you have a good idea and you can put it out there, you have the ability now to disseminate that idea to a wide audience who might want to see your work or might want to see that idea come to fruition, and they'll be willing to kick in a few bucks here, and you get enough people to do it, and suddenly you got a budget. So,
right, and that also builds your base, your fan base.
Absolutely.
From the beginning. I mean, if you have Kickstarter folks that are putting money into your project, they're going to champion your project from the very beginning. And I think if you have a strong Kickstarter or Indiegogo, or there's 100 other sites out there now, I think that, you know, between Twitter and Facebook and a YouTube page and having your own website and just connecting with those people and creating a conversation will build that audience naturally.
Well, and potentially, too, that's where that proof of concept thing comes in again, too, because if you have shown repeatedly that you can raise money to get your ideas made, the people somewhere up the line are going to say, oh, look, there's an interest in this, and I see there is because people are willing to put their money into something that doesn't exist yet. So that's kind of a nice way to maybe elevate your game to someone with more money, someone bigger production. They can say, hey, these guys are getting it done. They've got an audience. They've shown that they can actually get the stuff out there and attract people to it. So that can certainly help you, you know, move along up to that next level too. So,
and having good rewards for your Kickstarter, Indiegogo, or whatever is a big drive. As
don't
well.
Just offer hugs. Offer
yeah.
more than hugs.
Yeah, the free hug sign only works at the convention, so not so much online. So
that's another way to network. Get your talented friends. Can you draw pictures? Can you do this? Can you do this? Can you help me out? I'll do this in return, going back to the
or be willing
dish
to do things
favors.
Yourself too, you know.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, you know, cutting people's reels is not the same thing, but I, you know, I've done things before where, like, I'll do people's ringtones or I'll do their voicemails or things like that. Because it's really nothing that I have to do, but it certainly adds value to things for people that are interested in that, and it's a way we can say, hey, listen, you know, we appreciate what you're doing for us, so we want to do something special for you too.
Yeah, I'm from the old school of I haven't done a Kickstarter. I love that like that's now like we're like the old web vets. Kickstarter, I've never heard of that. But
you kids
stay off my digital lawn. But I do hear that you should try to keep your rewards digital as much as possible. Well, I knocked that over.
Yeah, delivery will kill
shipping.
You.
Yeah, shipping and all that stuff destroys you. And you know, I know that from. You know, we sold DVDs of Legend of Neil, and it was spending all day, like, packaging them yourself. Like, when now I know what those shipping and handling charges really are on those, like, infomercials. Because it is hell.
Jeff Lewis and I did t-shirts, mouse pads, and locks of his hair. I'm not joking. We actually had to go get locks of his hair cut and ship them to people. And it was one of those things where it was like, hey, it's kind of a joke, but did you want this? Yes. Send it to me. All right, cool. Don't do that.
What's your address for the restraining order? I'm just curious.
There's going to be an army of Jeff Lewis clones. I think if you have...
One is too many.
One is far too many. There are people who have questions. Should they start lining up at the thing?
Yeah.
Or do you even have time?
There's
or
actually a microphone in the middle.
Well,
just because there's a bunch of...
Or you can shout it.
Or just yell at each other, whatever.
Because
then everybody can hear the question.
Get up, do a little work.
Just tweet us your questions and we'll just get back to you.
Message us on MySpace and we'll get back to you.
Or Friendster.
U.S. Yeah. Postal Service, postcards are nice.
All right, how you doing, guys? So obviously, a project as ambitious as a web series requires meeting a lot of deadlines. What tips do you have for, you know, meeting those deadlines?
Don't sleep.
Yep. Work your ass off. Do everything yourself.
grow to hate yourself forever starting the project, contemplate suicide.
Don't procrastinate, but you're gonna.
Yeah.
Are these deadlines that like a company's giving you, or are these deadlines that you're putting upon yourself?
Just putting on yourself just to get the thing done.
Because for that, I've seen a lot of people do that where they shoot their footage. And the thing about doing this is once you've shot it and you've seen, you get really excited. So you're like, all right, cool, we're done. November 11th, we're doing this, you know. And then I know some people, and I've been guilty of it myself, like November, like wait until you're done and the project's perfect and then announce your release date.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a lot of people have to rush or you end up delaying it and then it becomes irrelevant. It's like, just go off, do it. And then when it's time to like really promote it and get it out there, know that you can meet that deadline, because then already you're off to a bad start, whether it be the product isn't up to the standards you were hoping it would be, or you end up pushing it and then you feel like that's a knock against your
own. And promote before
it
comes out.
Yeah,
build that.
From the time you even think about your project, you should start thinking about pre-production deadlines. Now I'm talking about like, oh, I'm going to release it this day, but if you don't give yourself a hard deadline, you'll never do it.
There you go. So opposite advice. Extend your deadline forever and give yourself hard deadlines.
Right, exactly.
You're welcome.
That was pre-production.
Yeah.
He was final product. Mm-hmm.
And promote it from the inception of the idea.
From the beginning of the idea.
Hey guys, I actually have a series screening here on Sunday morning.
Congratulations.
That's sort of gotten a little track to mine. It's called Harry Potter and the 10 Years Later.
Are you inviting us?
Awesome.
Yes.
Wonderful.
I'm also curious, like, it's gotten good reviews, it's gotten a lot of views. What is the next step for you guys in terms of translating that into actual jobs?
That's a really good question.
I already
have an actual job. This is just my side thing.
Yeah.
But I've been talking with Disney about buying the Lucasfilm. They already did that, didn't they? The goal is, whether it's a 3 or 4 minute episodic or it's a one shot deal and it's a trailer, the fact that it's out there and you don't know whose eyes are on it, that's the opportunity. You don't know that Steven Spielberg's kid decided to, Harry Potter, and it comes up on YouTube and suddenly you're the next big thing. It happens. Rarely, but the fact of the matter is it's out there and now you have the opportunity to do something more or bigger or better.
I think you can also get proactive with it though. Like once you've created something and you're really proud of it, you know, that is your calling card. You can send it out to people being like, maybe take some meetings if you can. Like I think that's the next step. Have maybe 3 more ideas or even 1 great idea that you want to do next, and then take some meetings. And if people respond to the material, they'll want to meet with you. They'll want to have a lunch, even though. And if they put you off like 6 times, like just take the hint, like they don't want to meet with you. They're being nice, but
3 is alright.
They will genuine. They yeah, 3. 3 is good. 3 is par.
Yeah,
I think for sure.
It does. Yeah, it's true though. It can lead to opportunity. I mean, when we first did the first video, the first teaser for Looking for Group, and all of them are parodies of Disney songs. So you know, I play Richard singing Part of Your World, except it's Slaughter Your World. If you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. And so my agent sent it to Disney, said, look at this. And Disney said, wow, that's great. I ended up then getting an audition for a Disney feature out of that, which I lost to a celebrity. They were suddenly like, oh, we didn't know he could sing. We didn't know this. So you put that stuff out there and you're not having to get in the door to say, I can do these things. People say, oh, he can do this thing. Maybe we should bring him in and talk to him.
Yeah, all the stuff that I've done for Shut Up Cartoons, the first one, Samurai Daycare, was the only one that I actually auditioned for. All the other shows after that, the producers just said, let's get that Dino guy. And they just called me up, said, hey, can you come do this? That led to Oishi, 16-Bit High School, all those shows, that all came about because the two producers knew each other. It was like, oh, yeah, you did that, didn't you? Can you do our show? And so I auditioned for 1 show, wound up on 5. So,
thanks, guys.
Hey, you guys talked a little bit about networking. And
no.
You're not.
You specifically mentioned going to groups. How do you find those groups? Is it Facebook it or
Google?
Google. Okay.
Meetup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Specifically, New Media Vault,
Media Vault.
Social Media Elite,
Filmbreak does a couple monthlies, don't they?
Doesn't Tube Filter still do their thing monthly?
Bi-monthly.
And actually, yeah. Craigslist. Yeah, I mean, I got Little Bush on Craigslist.
Dave's
I got all
list.
Of my first stuff. And, yeah.
I've
my
seen
list,
a lot of cool bases.
My list is different, though. You don't want to talk about that.
Awesome. So those are places you can Google that will help you.
Thank you.
And everyone's really friendly.
Or
like
cons.
When, or and cons too. It's a great place.
Yeah,
to
this
meet.
Room right now.
This,
everybody
this
in here
right
is doing
now,
web series.
Everyone,
so.
Just introduce yourselves.
Say cons.
But also, like the thing that I've been really thrilled about is the web series community is really friendly. It's very un-Hollywood in some respects, and everyone is very nice and very welcoming. So yeah, it's scary to walk into a place where you don't know everybody. I think we've all had to do that at some point. But just suck it up and do it, and you'll meet lots of people, and most of them will be friendly. Some nut jobs, but mostly friendly.
Yeah, mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah, you'll weed the other ones out pretty quickly.
So. Yeah.
Hi. You touched on how basically making a web series, you have to do it for free and don't really have much of a budget. Now, if you get your crew together and all that, how do you keep it from... Most new web series are all like shot in your room, in your apartment or something. Because all the permits and stuff like that and finding locations. So how do you keep it from getting viewers to watch your web series if it's just in your apartment with no other locations?
I think maybe the mistake in thinking there is the idea that it's just in your apartment. I mean, your apartment, first of all, can be dressed to be anything, but really it's ultimately about the story and the characters that matter. Like, they're the greatest, I mean... If you think about even Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, like, ultimately that was just a room that they dressed to look cool. But what was cool about it, it wasn't really, like, the dressing behind it, and that's even, you know, that even though it was cool, it was that there was a bad guy singing about, you know, his all of his problems getting into the union of bad guys. And so, like, that was just a specific funny thing that was ultimately was shot with one camera, one dude sitting down singing into lens, you know? So it's be creative with your constraints. Mm-hmm. That
and
matters.
Getting Neil Patrick Harris.
And getting
yeah.
Neil yeah. Patrick Harris doesn't
yeah.
hurt.
Yeah,
if
you can do
yeah.
that, that helps.
Yeah. So you think just relying on the screenplay, basically?
Writing, I would say writing is king.
Tell a good story.
If it's a good story, you could tell it in a car, in a bathroom. Yeah. You know, it has to be well written and well acted. It's even a film. I mean, you know, they don't green light films that have crappy actors and
yes,
shitty writers. Well, they do. UB Ball, Google him. But, I mean, you'll find lots of web series not shot in people's bedrooms. Mm-hmm. Lots of them.
Or yeah. Or if you do, like, just be really creative about the space. I've shot a lot of stuff in houses and apartments that were other things. Shelf Life, that we both worked on, was focusing on four action figures. This was live action on a shelf in a little boy's room. So it was a little corner, and we built that shelf in an apartment. I did another series called Hurtling Through Space at an Alarming Rate, and that was about a department that went through space at an alarming rate, and we CG'd all the
just green screen the
thrusters,
windows.
Yeah, the windows. Yeah, I was looking for my nerd word there, and I can find it. Thrusters.
Well, yeah, have a story and an idea first, and then worry about the details later.
Yeah,
that's
the
you'll
most
notice the there's a common denominator with all the things they're talking about. Every single one of these things, they mention what the concept or premise is, and everybody goes,
oh,
"Hey, that
cool.
sounds cool." Yeah. Boom! There's your beginning right there.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's how you get your voice actors too. You gotta have a cool premise.
Also, think about the most unique thing that you have access to that no one else does, and shoot something there. Create a story around that. Like maybe
maybe you have a boat.
Yeah, maybe you have like a yacht because you're already rich. No, I'm
saying. Yeah, oh, fine, you best friend. You have a yacht.
We are running out of time. Is it quick? Quick questions?
Yeah,
lightning
okay.
round.
Go.
I actually just have a question about exposure. I know that YouTube is kind
that
of like
wasn't
the go-to
me.
For everything. Not that kind of exposure. But, I was curious, like, I know a lot of your guys' sites, you have your own sites, your own personal things that you host. Legend of Neil is one of them. And I was curious, starting off, do you recommend kind of going with something like YouTube, developing from there, or is it, like, as much as possible is the better way to go?
Honestly, it's whatever floats. Whatever floats your boat, you know, whatever area of the internet you feel most comfortable in, just carve out a niche there. The key to trying to get an audience, I think, is to keep everything conversational. You know, the internet is so crowded now with people all screaming for attention, saying, look at me, look at my crap. So don't just start off being that guy. Try to get people involved and feeling like you're just talking to them like a person, and you'll build a fan base that way. Wherever you decide to go, whether it's YouTube or Twitter or lookatmycrap.com's forums, like wherever you go.
Think as a promoter from the time that you think of the idea. How am I going to promote this? And whatever the blogs are that you want to reach out to, whatever fan base you want to reach out to, you start reaching out to those folks really, really early. And that's how you build your audience, potentially your team, who knows what from there.
Great. Thank you, guys.
All right. Last one.
That was actually my question, too, so
oh,
thank
good.
You.
All right.
Yes.
Yes. I want everybody to be able to tell us what you're working on or whatever, what you have coming out.
I have Peak Lust coming out in a couple weeks, and I have a graphic novel that I'm working on that I'm not really ready to say anything else about. So just buy Geek Lust and anything with my name on it.
Web series-wise, we do work on the web series
right.
Geeks and Gamers Anonymous. Season 1 is out, and we are currently working on Season 2.
Yes.
Awesome. JediCamp.com. I also run a film festival called the First Glance Film Festival. 16 years, 14th year is calling for entries if you are a filmmaker. We take everything from features down to web series.
Up to web series.
Up to web series.
Well, down timing-wise, features.
Thank you.
I'll take that.
I'm currently working on a couple of series. Right now, perhaps of most interest to you guys, is getting ready for Season 2 of The Ladies and the Gents. We have a panel at 10 a.m. on Sunday, which is really 11 a.m. because we get the extra hour, but 10 a.m., where we'll be telling writers and directors and actors how to submit for Season 2. We will be requesting submissions for that. We're very excited to get going with that. And you can reach me on Facebook and on Twitter at TheStephThorpe or on my website, TheStephanieThorpe.com. And I have postcards and buttons if you want to grab it for information to see TheLadiesAndGents.com.
For me, please go to YouTube.com/effinfunny and subscribe. That's my channel, EFFIN funny, FUNNY, and we have a bunch of new series coming out, one with that was co-created with at Brubaker that I'm really excited about, called Code 5, and it's very funny. And then another one about an alien ER hospital called ERlians. That's pretty fun, too, and silly. And so those are coming out soon, and a bunch of fun other series that I've been doing with Nerdist are on there. And then the second thing is go to Nerdist and watch Real Housewives. And it's even if you hate, especially if you hate Real Housewives, you'll enjoy it, because I certainly do, and I made it. So yeah, please check that out and upvote, share, hug, whatever you need to do to get it out there. Thanks.
I worked with Sandeep and Ed Brubaker on the Code 5 show. Wait, when does that come out again? So look out for that. And right now, you can catch every Monday on Geek and Sundry, Co-Optitude, which is basically Felicia Day and Ryan Day. They've never had a console growing up, so like we do like, hey, here's a Nintendo system, and then they just hate everything and. And it's like a Mystery Science Theater for video games. And then My Gimpy Life Season 2 comes out in February. And then there's another show, we don't know when it's coming out yet, but it's called Hench, and it's an action comedy show, which I'm very, very proud of.
Cool. Oh, yeah. Well, again, 16-Bit High School is going to be premiering on the YouTube channel, the Shut Up Cartoons. This year, we're also going to be doing another season of Oishi High School Battle. I just did the feature film Champions of Oz, which was fun because I played the Tin Man. So I've been the Scarecrow and the Tin Man. I can just get a lion. I'll have the whole Holy Trinity. And of course, I can be found at DinoAndrade.com as well as SoulGeek.com for you folks looking for that.
And the wall at the post office.
Here's Dave.
Let's see. Shelf Life Season 4 is coming out on DVD before Christmas. You told me I could tell you that. I'll have a bunch of extras on it. So Season 5, they tell me nothing. So I know nothing that's going on there. I know they're doing one. But looking for group. Just found out this week. I think we're about to launch a Kickstarter. Instead of doing the film, they're looking at doing an actual 22-minute pilot to do a TV series, which would be really cool. I'd love to do that. What else? Got a bunch of video games coming out, animation, blah, 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 all that. Go to Twitter, at Dave B. Mitchell. I'm on there. I have a fan page on Facebook, and you know, please add me and say hi and tell me you were here and all that kind of stuff, and thanks for coming.
Thank you.